Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, June 16th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, how are you? How was your weekend?
What's a weekend?
I don't know. It's just one day after another.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, the whole world is falling apart, and hey, gold down $3.50. You know, you talk about bargain basement pricing. $1,273 today. Silver down too at $1,976. Platinum was up $3 today at $1,440. Palladium down a buck at $8.13. And USDX today is trading down a little bit weak, 0.16 at 80.45. Not a lot of change in crude oil, 106.84. And the paper markets today, just a typical Monday, very little change in the markets. The Dow was up 5 at 16,781. The NASDAQ up 10. At 43.21, and the S&P up 1 at 19.37, and the 10-year yield 2.60%, down 0.01. So it's going to be a little bit of an odd week. I think you had U.S. factory output. You know, they come out and say, oh, it rebounded in May. That's the latest evidence that the manufacturing is boosting growth. And a good, hoorah there. And you also have the Federal Reserve officials gathering this week, and you're going to have the Fed Chair, Janet Yellen. She's going to come out and speak with reporters. And everyone wants to know, like they always want to know, and as if they really get an answer, that the Fed will finally start raising short-term interest rates. And how and when will it start unloading its vast investment holdings? And, of course, these answers will possibly affect loan rates for both individuals and businesses. And it's just more of the same old when it comes to our economy. Not a lot of truth being shed. Not a lot of light is what's really going on. And certainly it doesn't help a lot of folks out there when they're trying to make investment decisions on Wednesday. The Fed will update its forecast, and it could downgrade. Today, the IMF came out, Al, and predicted that the U.S. economy will grow a modest 2% this year, and that is below their initial previous estimate of 2.7%. And so, it's pretty much the their cheerleaders are all in line. And
well, what interests me is the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
They've been buying assets. All right, to the tune of, they started out with quantitative easing. They were buying these assets for $85 billion a month, and now they're down to $45 billion, and they're going to taper off, and they're going to stop buying these assets. But I don't think they're assets. I think the reason they've been buying them is in order to maintain the price with U.S. Treasuries, for example. You can't sell that many Treasuries at current prices to investors other than the Federal Reserve. People have tapered off, and that was part of the reason people stopped largely investing in U.S. Treasuries, because they said this is no longer a good deal.
Right.
And the Federal Reserve stepped in and said, okay, we'll buy the Treasuries at what is probably an exaggerated price, rather than allow the markets to determine that the Treasuries are only worth a fraction of the price they're selling for, and thereby admit the dollar is going down the pipe and so on. The point I'm trying to get to is that the Federal Reserve has been buying these alleged assets. Now they're going to stop buying these alleged assets. But I think they're toxic assets. I don't think they're assets at all. Or if they are, only a fraction of their real value. I don't think the market value is anywhere near as much as the Federal Reserve allegedly paid for them. And you mentioned that they may have some plans on selling these assets. And I just don't see that. I'm going to be interested to see if that happens. Because who's going to buy them? If you've been buying bonds and paying 100 cents on the face on the dollar, the face value of the dollar, the bonds essentially, but they're only worth 60 cents relative to the face value. Who are you going to find to buy your bonds at face value or anywhere close to face value if the market says they're only worth 60 cents? I mean, I don't think they can put these assets on the market. I think they've bought them, they've squirreled them away, and they're hoping that the Federal Reserve gets hit by a meteor or something where they can destroy all the records, and maybe they could have they could have the Internal Revenue records in there at the same time, the same ones where Ms. Lerner, she loses her records, and,
yes,
and the government loses. Gee, I just hate it when that happens. You know, we lost $4 or $5 trillion worth of assets, and we don't even know what they were or where they are anymore, so I don't know. You know?
Does that file under their Bill of Rights?
I don't know. It might be. It might be. We have the right, yeah, you have the right to information, provided we can find it. In any case, it's just, you just look at it, and I don't see that they're going to be able to sell those assets anywhere near what they've invested in them, those alleged assets.
Well, supposedly they were supposed to hold on to them until the end, until they actually expired. But, you know, they got so many other things going on. And wasn't it James Corbyn? You know, I mean, basically he thought that, you know, they're there to destroy the Federal Reserve. I mean, it's doomed.
Well,
the Federal Reserve is doomed.
They've turned it into a trash can.
Yep. That's
we've
what
stuck
I think.
A big
I agree.
Garbage bag, and we've
yep.
stuck so much toxic assets in the Federal Reserve. And it's time to just send somebody up in a Caterpillar and just pick the Federal Reserve up and dump it in one of the landfills of all the trash that's inside it. It's now, you know, it's worth more dead than alive in a sense. So interesting times.
It certainly is. And, you know, today Russia cut their gas supplies to Ukraine because of the unpaid bills. They halted the natural gas deliveries today, and since they did not pay for their multi-billion-dollar gas debt and demanded upfront payments for future supplies. And Ukraine has had enough reserves to last until December.
Till when?
December.
Well,
that's quite a ways. Yeah.
That only means they have to get through probably about 4 more months of winter without any natural gas.
Mm.
That should be fun in the Ukraine.
Mm.
Huh? Go out near Dhaka, or however they pronounce that, and just enjoy the winter wonderland without any heat.
So you think that'll be settled before then?
I don't know what's going to happen, but it's, you know, we also see Russia in part is doing business with China, and they're going to build a giant pipeline from Russia to China, one or more, that are going to help transmit natural gas from Russia to China. Well, it's a smart move on Russia's part, and some people say it's a pivot evidence. They are pivoting away from Europe and toward Asia and China. I don't know that that's true, but it just makes sense that Russia has two different pipelines, one going to the left and one going to the right. And in the case either one of them tries to hassle Russia, they still have a pipeline where they can sell natural gas to a big customer. All right? If you have only one customer, you are definitely, you know, you're vulnerable to whatever that customer demands or says. If you've got two customers, you can get by. If one of them says, I don't want your gas anymore, we're not going to take anymore, okay. All right, well, goodbye. You know, you don't want that to happen, but it's survivable, and I don't doubt that's part of the Russian reasoning for setting up. Got one pipeline going east, one pipeline going west. Which one do you want to shut down? Russia will still get by.
And it looks like you have a lot of Russian companies are preparing to pay for trade.
Yep. They're, and that's come up. This is in from 25 CNBC. I think it's Channel 25. Russian companies prepare to pay for trade in renminbi, Chinese currency. Russian companies are preparing to switch contracts to renminbi and other Asian currencies amid fears that Western sanctions may freeze them out of the U.S. dollar market. Over the last few weeks, there has been a significant interest in the market from large Russian corporations to start various products, to sell various products in renminbi and other Asian currencies to set up accounts in Asian locations. According to one source, expanding the use of non-dollar currencies was one of the bank's main tasks in Russia. Given the extent of bilateral trade with China, developing the use of settlements in rubles and yuan, renminbi is a priority on the agenda, and so we are working on it now. Since May, we have been carrying out this work. May, of course, is when we got into the problem with the Ukraine, and the United States decided to launch some sanctions that really didn't amount to much. But nevertheless, what the point to all of this is, here we have Russia, which I believe is the world's fourth largest, is it fourth largest economy?
Probably.
I don't recall, but it's certainly in that neighborhood. It's not as large as the United States,
fourth or
China,
fifth.
Japan. It's in the neighborhood of
India. India's bigger.
You think India is bigger than Russia?
I would think.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think the economy is bigger. No, I don't believe
all
that.
Right.
Bigger population, but I don't believe the economy.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
But in any case, it's a significant economy. And it's going, and we have now set up sanctions to interfere with Russia's interference in the Ukraine, which was started by our interference in the Ukraine in the first place to overthrow the existing government. And then Russia came back and grabbed Crimea and may grab some more of eastern Ukraine before this is done. And the whole thing is resulting in less people using dollars. And the only thing that really gives our dollar value right now is its use as the world reserve currency. It used to be account for probably 95% or more of international trades. Now it's down in the neighborhood of 80%. This will whittle away at it. It'll fall down now to 75%, or who knows where it's going to fall to. But as fewer people use the dollar overseas, there's less demand for dollars. When there's less demand for dollars, the value of the purchasing power of the dollar goes down. So what our government has done is, by meddling in the Ukraine situation, we and threatening to push Russia out of dollar-denominated currency transactions, Russia say, okay, fine, we can get by. We can do rubles and yuan and renminbi and the Singapore dollar and the Hong Kong dollar. There's plenty of currencies in the world. U.S. dollar is not the only one. What we have done is ultimately contribute to the decline of the dollar's status as a world reserve currency. That decline will not be decisive or crippling or fatal at this moment, so far as I can see, but it keeps eating away at that status world reserve currency. When it's finally diminished significantly, the dollar will have much less value than it has today. Can't be good for any of us.
Actually, Russia's number 8.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But a lot of the countries in the upper tier are all part of the European Union. So if you total them and put them into one group, and India was number 10. So there, now we have it for future reference, Al.
Uh-huh. If we can remember it.
Absolutely.
Besides, those numbers will change in the next 60 days anyway.
At least once.
Yeah.
At least once. A lot of things going on in Iraq. We don't have much time to talk about Iraq prior to the breakout. But
yeah, we got a little bit. Here's part of it. Here's something from the New York Times. The headline is Obama pushes Iraqis to mend sectarian rifts. President Obama returns to Washington on Monday with a plan to urge Iraq's leaders to form a unity government. See, Iraq is divided among the Shiites, the Sunnis, and the Kurds, and they're squabbling over power. And each one of them wants the power to abuse the other two. And right now the Shiites have the power to abuse the Sunnis and the Kurds, and so the Kurds and the Sunnis are attacking, and they're saying, no, we should have the power to abuse the Shiites or the Kurds or whoever, but each one wants the power to oppress the other. And President Obama says what we need is a unity government in Iraq. As President Obama weighs airstrikes against marauding militia in Iraq, he has concluded that the American military action must be conditioned on a political plan to try to heal Iraq's sectarian rifts. Therein, in the previous sentence, we see the fundamental false premise that dooms all of Obama's efforts to failure. He sees the conflict between the Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds as primarily sectarian and largely secular and political, rather than as spiritual. The people in Iraq are engaged in spiritual warfare, holy war between competing sects of the Muslim faith. Because the essence of the battle is spiritual, it will not be, cannot be, solved with sectarian and or secular compromises of the sort Obama is proposing. Figuratively speaking, President Obama is trying to stop a forest fire from devastating a national park by spraying insecticides on the trees. The bugs aren't the problem. The forest is being destroyed by the fire of spiritual warfare. You can't solve a problem if you won't honestly diagnose the problem. And Obama's arguing essentially we have a sectarian problem, a secular problem, and it's just there's not going to be a secular and or sectarian solution. Just can't be. It's not going to happen. What else? We've got more on this that I'd like to talk about when we return from our break. A few other comments that are worthwhile. And so what we'll do is we will take our break and get some commercials under our belt. And Melody and I will be back in just a moment. So please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. 229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
We got a great little special going today, Al. It's, again, one of my small fractional pieces, one of my favorites, the AU $5 Liberty gold piece. This is an old special. It's a very favorite special. It's a very popular special. The AU $5 Liberty gold piece, along with 20 one-ounce silver eagles. This includes shipping, and this also includes, again, this month, one free silver eagle for this trade. And your total cost for this is $888. It includes everything out the door. They must call us at 1-800-375-4188. And I got a lot of nice little mixed dates on those AU $5 Liberties. Many of them are pre-1900. So they're great little coins for barter. They're great little investment coins. They've been doing very well with this downturn in the gold prices that we've seen. And of course, the silver eagles have become very popular. And these are 2014, the year's 2014 on the silver eagles. That's $888. That's 1-800-375-4188. And again, folks, make sure you sign up for the newsletter at our website, DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. And also, if you would like to, you can listen to the radio program there, also at the website. Al?
I'm just laughing here a little bit as I'm swapping a message with Frank, our producer.
Well, it's not very good when I'm giving specials, Alfred. Let's get back to Iraq.
All right, so in any case, we have an article here from New York Times. Obama pushes Iraqis to mend sectarian rifts. I'm talking about Obama sees this, the premise that this is simply, this is not a solution. There's not a solution to these sectarian rifts. These people have been at each other's throats periodically for centuries. This isn't a recent event. The Sunnis and the Shiites go back. There was a fundamental division, and it has to do with who is the legitimate heir to Muhammad. All right, and some people think it's his bloodline, and some people think it's the other group think it's the Muslim priests. I don't recall exactly how it breaks down, but this is a fundamental schism in the Muslim faith, and it's been going on for, again, centuries. This is since almost as soon as Muhammad died, this rift began, and it persists to this day, and these people can't accept each other. Both of them believe that their faith is the one true faith, and the other one is engaged in blasphemy. So here we have Obama suggesting we need a new national unity government in Iraq, and I'm just saying, you know, Obama can't even form a unity government in Congress between the Democrats and the Republicans. He can't form a unity government on the streets between blacks and whites in this country. What makes him think he can help form a unity government between two competing Muslim sects who are not only famous for killing each other, but both of which believe they're serving God while their opponents are engaged in blasphemy? You're not going to sit down, set these guys down, and reach some sort of a compromise. The most you can hope for is they'll stop killing each other for a while. But they're not going to like each other. Not really. Not on average. You know, there'll be exceptions, of course, but not on average. The United States, as officials said, has asked the Iraqi's Prime Minister, Nuri Kamal al-Maliki, a Shiite, to work with the Kurds to seek to persuade the disaffected Sunni minority. Now, the Sunnis are the minority in Iraq. They held power under Saddam Hussein, even though they were the minority. The United States came in and put the majority Shiites in a position of power, and the disaffected Sunnis, minority in Iraq, they are upset about this. But it's interesting to note that the Sunnis, as I understand it, they're the minority in Iraq, but they are 90% majority among Muslims in general. Most Muslims, the majority of Muslims, are Sunni. They're only a minority in Iraq and in Iran. So you can imagine that the Sunnis who are coming back and invading Iraq at this time, they're going to get a lot of support from a lot of Muslims in other parts of the Middle East. And the Shiites may be the majority in Iran, and they may be the majority in Iraq, but they are a minority within the Middle East Muslim community. In any case, and the United States says we need to all sit down and work these things out. And the Shiites are probably going to say, that's a good idea. Let's have a peace conference. And the Sunnis are going to say, uh-uh. We got so much weapons and allies and support that we're going to take this place back. They don't have an incentive to negotiate. They're winning. Why negotiate while they're winning? In any case, Obama wants them to work together. And he says that the next government has to be an ally, not an adversary. All right? So when you take over government, if the Shiites or whoever are the majority and they run the government, still they have to work as an ally with the Kurds and an ally with the Shiite or the Sunnis. All right? Got to all get together and work as allies, not adversaries. And I'm just curious, when Obama talks about ally, not adversary, is he also referring to the way the government is operated here in the United States? Is our government an ally, given that it's shipped American industries and jobs to China and third world nations and currently encourages illegal aliens to invade this country? Is that the way our government works, as an ally with the American people rather than an adversary? Is that the kind of ally, not adversarial relationship between government and the people that Obama's advocating? And it goes on. They want to overhaul. Obama says we need to overhaul Iraq's routed army. Well, all I can say is ha, ha, ha. Does Obama believe he has some secret means to restore morale and courage to an army that's run like a bunch of frightened schoolgirls? Dream on. The Iraqi army is broken, and it's not going to be mended anytime soon. That army's morale is destroyed and couldn't be rebuilt in less than 5 or more likely 10 years. Obama also advocates that all three groups, that would be the Sunni, Shiites, and Kurds, must be adequately represented in Baghdad. So I'm curious, what about adequate representation in the United States? Must American groups who are white, male, or middle class be adequately represented in Congress? Or should Congress only represent those special interests that are wealthy enough to bribe congressmen and with generous political campaign contributions? And the point I'm trying to make with this is Obama is advocating wonderful things. All right, everybody in Iraq needs to sit down and sing Kumbaya, but nobody's singing Kumbaya in this country. And it seems to me that if you're the president of this country, why don't you get everybody singing Kumbaya here before we start selling the record to the people of Iraq? The president's two-track response, the official said, stems from his belief that military strikes on radical Sunni militants, absent parallel measures of reform to reform Iraq's government, will simply hand the country over to competing Shiite, Kurdish, and Sunni fighters and a future of unending sectarian strife. It'll end when one or the other groups is exterminated. That's when the fighting will end. And like I say, Sunnis probably have no incentive to negotiate a peace at this time. The only way they'd be brought to the peace table is if the United States goes back and starts bombing the crapola out of the Sunni invaders, rebels. All right? If they can bomb enough of them, they may be able to talk them back into the peace table for a while. But as soon as we leave, then they'll get back to chopping off each other's heads. The truth is, our government doesn't want to admit that, one, we live in an age of spiritual warfare, and two, those who fight as secularists, they fight secular warfare, and that's how we fight. We go over there and we bomb them and we kill a bunch of them and we say, look, we'll cut you a deal. We'll stop bombing you if you give us 30% of your oil. We make them an offer they can't refuse. And secularists will accept those offers. All right? That's how secular governments wage war and settle war. But people who engage in spiritual warfare can't compromise. They are implacable. And they aren't susceptible. You can't go over there and easily bomb them into peace. You might bomb them to stop fighting for a while, but they're going to be back. As soon as you run out of aviation fuel or bombs, the spiritual warriors will be back because they believe they're doing God's will. We live in an age increasingly of spiritual warfare. Those who fight as secularists can't possibly hope to defeat those who are motivated to fight by their faith. Why won't our government admit these realities? Because our government doesn't want the American people to begin to see the presence and even necessity of spiritual warfare. They don't want us to find our spiritual foundation. National government doesn't want spiritual warfare in the United States because they know that's a war our secular government can't possibly win. Government doesn't want a spiritually aroused American people, therefore government insists that all wars are secular or at most sectarian. We're seeing holy war going on. You know, you look at what's happening in the Middle East. What animates that? If not the Muslim complaint with the Jewish nation of Israel. I mean, every place you look in the Middle East, it's all about religious affiliation. The Muslims hate the Jews. The Sunnis hate the Shiites. The Kurds hate all of them. You know? How are you going to solve this? I don't think you can. If it were up to me again, you know, my attitude is burn, baby, burn. If these people want to kill each other, I don't see how it can be stopped. And if it were up to me, I wouldn't try to stop it. It's not up to me, so Obama will continue to sing Kumbaya, but I don't think anybody's going to join in the chorus.
I agree on that, Al. And we do have a caller coming in. We have Jim from West Virginia.
Well, Jim.
I'm back. don't get in the middle of a bar fight.
That's it.
Number one.
A domestic disturbance.
Yes, or domestic disturbance. Half a century ago, my dad said Congress represented the lobbyists, those who could blackmail them, and those who threatened to blow their brains out after they got J.F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have something else, I think, and then I have kind of an announcement. I believe that the fast food restaurants now are called manufacturing outfits because they manufacture hamburgers. So mm-hmm. if the manufacturing sector is growing, does that tell you people are buying more burgers? I mean, you know, this is getting crazy. Well, anyway.
Well, the whole thing, where can you get honest information, Jim? You know, I mean, who even knows what's going on? I've talked about this on the program a time or two in the past, but the president of China, their nation, is so interested in maintaining harmony that they routinely lie. It's part of their culture. They'll tell you whatever you need to know to keep you calm. And the result is the president of China has admitted, or the premier of China, he's admitted he doesn't know what's really going on in the economy because he knows the leaders of the individual provinces are feeding him lies to keep him happy.
Well,
nobody really knows what's going on. That's China. This country is much the same.
Yeah, isn't that the same thing our government does?
Yes.
I want to mention something here, and I'm right nervous about this. I do very few radio programs, but I'm going to be doing one tonight with Butch Paul about ham radio, saying to people who don't know anything about it, and in preparedness for telecommunications shutdown, which I do believe is going to happen. Obama has signed an executive order here last year and a half, says he can shut down the telephones if he wants to, and I'm sure the net goes with it. Now, this has only gotten a tiny fraction of the traction it deserves, like the International Poppy Maintenance Code, but I'm going to be doing one. Let me just give you one. Well, this is immediate. Yeah, it's a pretty big shocker. If you search the FCC database, you will discover that FEMA has radios licensed in the military aircraft band. Now, does that tell you that FEMA can call in airstrikes or what? Now, folks, they have their communication system in place, and they're going to knock ours out if things go stinky, if things go sour in this country. And the only thing you're going to have left are batteries and radios, and ham radio is part of it. When governments break down, government breaks down to the neighborhood level. You watch my back, I'll watch yours. You can communicate with car horns, bullhorns, non-licensed radios, ham radio. But this is just another one of those stories which just doesn't get traction, and they don't want it out there. So, folks, I tell you what, if things go stinky, you better get your radios now, make sure they work in the terrain you're in, because just like the ammo shortage, if things get stinky, if things go bad, those radios are going to disappear. That's about the only thing you'll ever know. So, incidentally, I guess you know, well, way back when I was involved in commercial radio decades ago, they had NEBS. It was the National Emergency Broadcast System, and they could control every single transmitter if there's a national emergency. And that's still in place. So, folks, if the phone system goes down, I don't know if it'll go down. I mean, I have no crystal ball, but I know this has happened in other countries. I know that on the West Coast there are some people demonstrating. Oh, I don't remember where, California or something. And all the cell phones didn't work. Surprise, surprise, not to me. They do it in every stinking country where they have IMF riots, regime changes, economic collapse, you name it. And, of course, they blame the rioters. So I'm going to do one, and I'm right nervous because every time I do a radio show, it's on something that they don't want out there. If anything happens to me, folks, you'll know about it, okay? So I'm right nervous.
All right, Jim.
I'm going to do one. And I thank you for everything you do, but financial survival also involves what I've just mentioned. Catch you later.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Talk to you later. We're going to take a break for some more commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on financial survival in just a moment.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here at Financial Survival, co-host Melody Cederstrom. What's next, Melody?
Well, you know, you were talking about Iraq. I mean, there were some things going on. I don't know if I have the information here, but out of Kenya. I mean, it's really disturbing. I mean, nobody cares what goes on in Kenya. Nobody talks about what goes on in Kenya.
Of the United States every once in a while. So I think we should be paying a lot more attention to Kenya than we have in the past, but go ahead.
But, you know, it's just another thing, sign of the times, the I don't know what you want to call it, what's happening around here. There's just so much bloodshed, so much. And when you talk about about spiritual, you know, you had gunmen who, and it wasn't that long ago, was it a year ago at the mall where they killed so many people? But the gunmen went door to door in Kenyan coastal town demanding to know if the men inside were Muslim and if they spoke Somali. If the extremists did not like the answers, they just opened fire.
Yep.
And, you know, the attacks began last night. You had the World Cup going on, so you had a lot of residents that were watching the game. See what happens when you get so involved in just watching games and you're distracted?
Well, they should have just when these Muslims come to the door and they want to ask these questions and you're watching the game, invite them in and tell them we're watching a football game and they can have a beer. See how that goes over with them.
But what happened, a lot of these, and then when they came out of from the games, the town saw just the devastation that happened during the game. And there was one report where someone had gone to a house, asked in Swahili whether they were Muslims, and her husband told them that they were Christians, and they shot them. So you do have a lot of, just like Gaddafi in his area and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of Christians that are, and that never gets into the news.
No, it's one of these things. You can live together for a while, but when things get difficult and people start going into poverty in particular, mm-hmm. I think that predisposes people to take more fanatical and implacable positions. When we are stressed enough, we start blaming other races, other cultures, invaders, other religions. we are more inclined to invade them, or excuse me, to blame them for whatever problems we're having. It's their fault. It's part of human nature. And sometimes it's true. Sometimes it is the fault. All right. But what aggravates us and really sets us off is if we start going into poverty. When we start running out of money and we can't get a new house or a new car or even find groceries, that predisposes us to pick up some pretty radical opinions. So when you see the world slipping into a recession or a depression or poverty or not enough food to go around, I guarantee this is conducive. We're going to fight, all right? And the reasons for the fight may be, we may have 100 different reasons. But the real reason may be poverty. We're going to fight. We're going to try to get what we need to survive, even if we have to steal and kill to get it. And sad thing, but you know, life is life. Human nature is human nature.
People don't react until they have children or their own bellies are empty. And we're not immune here in the U.S.
No, I understand. You know, we've got something here from Sovereign Man, a newsletter, and it's China's growing appetite, or at least that's the headline I put on it. I say, Ni Zhenbang, a Chinese agronomy expert and former director of the Chinese State Grain Administration, really recently announced that 2013 was a record year for Chinese grain production. Produced more grain in 2013 than any other year. Right? However, although the number is huge, said Nye, it still could not satisfy domestic consumer demand. They grew more grain than they've ever grown before, but it still wasn't enough to supply the demand of the people in China. In recent years, China's food imports have been increasing. Agricultural product imports are roughly equivalent to the productive capacity of 47 million hectares of planted area. 47 million hectares. They are importing, China is importing right now. They are importing products that are equivalent to the productive capacity of 47 million hectares of planted area. 47 million hectares is 181,000 square miles. That's a total landmass that's larger than the entire state of California. That's how much China needs right now coming in to feed its people. And the article continues. It says the chief economist of China's agricultural ministry, Qian Keming, estimates that in coming years, Chinese grain demand will increase by 10 million additional tons each year. In other words, it's up 10 million this year. It's up on base, and in addition to that, another 10 million the following year, and another each subsequent year. Based on the global average yield of 3.0, I don't want to get into that right now. We're talking about at 10 million additional tons of grain per year. This is going to require an additional 12,000 square miles, additional square miles of farmland each year, every year. Now, where are we going to find an extra 12,000 square miles of farmland each year, every year, to satisfy China's growing demand? And the answer is we're not. You might be able to make this work a little bit at first, but you can't. China's growth has to be stopped. And if they can't acquire the grain from 12,000 additional square miles, this is an area the size of the Netherlands, if they can't acquire the agricultural products from additional 12,000 square miles each year, by peaceful trade, they're going to either go hungry or they're going to go to war. The numbers are so large here, and we're only talking about one country and one food product, grain, in these examples. There's nothing in this article about meat, fruits, nuts, etc. Nor does the article talk about the growing food demand for billions of other people across the developing world. Now, the growing demand for foreign food imports can't possibly be sustained for long by means of peaceful trade. by means of war and conquest, that growing demand for food imports might be sustained. China's growing demand for food imports might be sustained for a little longer, but even that can't last for more than a decade. The implication in all this is that China's incredible appetite for food imports cannot be sustained. They might be able to hold it together one way or another for a decade, but after that, I can't see that this is going to continue. Once those food imports begin to fall, China should be more prone to political instability, government oppression, revolution, and perhaps even national dissolution. It might fall apart. The implication in all this, one implication is that one of the best investments over the course of the next decade is going to be food. You can figure a way to get into agriculture, right? Buy a farm. Get some land for yourself. Get into one of these situations where you grow your fish and your vegetables in a aquaculture set up in your backyard. You can bet that the price of food is going to rise and rise continuously, steadily, and significantly over every year for the next decade. That would be my guess. I don't expect to see any relief. And if you do any grocery shopping, I buy my own groceries, I go down there. I see what's happening in the prices. Now Obama talks about we're working on 2% inflation. Bunk. We get 2% inflation per month in the grocery stores. Or pretty close. I mean, it may be an exaggeration, but Obama talks about trying to raise up to 2% inflation a year. We're close to 2% per month in the grocery stores. That's an exaggeration, but not an enormous exaggeration. And I don't see this stopping anytime soon. And one of the implications then is that your food budget is going to get higher and higher and higher. It's going to consume a bigger and bigger proportion of your income. And you can take advantage of this if you're wealthy and invest in agriculture one way or another. You can buy stock in agricultural companies, although I'm generally opposed to buying stocks, anything paper. I'm looking for something tangible, like gold. Or maybe land, if you can buy farmland, if there's a way that you can get into actually owning the land, all right, and producing on it, it may be worth your time. And again, one of these aquaculture systems that can be set up in your backyard that can provide you with fish and vegetables. The day just might come when you're pretty pleased with yourself for setting up a system like that. I don't expect to see it in the next 3, 4, 5 years. Necessarily, but if we had a breakdown, if there was any significant economic breakdown in this country, which is the least likely scenario, it's the most extreme and therefore least likely. But if we got to that, we'd be out of food in pretty short order. There's only 3 days' supply in the local grocery stores, and after that, where do you get your food? You know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have some stockpiled. Won't be a bad idea to have a means of production in your backyard. But in any case, the point to this, 2 points to the article. One, the demand for food and the land that food on which you can grow food is increasing dramatically, and the prices of food will go up, and the prices of agricultural land will go up. You can bet on it. That's one of the implications. The other implication is that China, and we talked a little about this last week, people are concerned that China is going to be some sort of a superpower. It might appear to be one for a brief period of time, but they've got so much trouble, internal trouble. It's more people than anyone can handle. But I don't see any way that they can maintain themselves as something like a superpower for long. Too many internal problems. One of the major problems is not enough food. They can't grow enough of their own. They can't support themselves, except at a poverty level. So I don't anticipate China to be the world's superpower for long. It might reach that status for a little while, but I think it's too unstable to hold it. And the prices of food and the availability of food are going to become, prices are going up, availability's going down. You should govern yourself accordingly over the course of the next several years.
The question is, who's going to fail first, the U.S. or China?
I don't know. And one of the points about that is it's almost irrelevant. Who's going to fail first? I don't know who's going to fail first. But the point is, if there's going to be a widespread failure, global or national, your objective is to see that you survive. Regardless of what's going on around you, you've got to ensure that you and your family get by as best you can under what may be very hostile circumstances. Those people who aren't as well prepared, they're going to be in more jeopardy. They're going to suffer more than people that have some sort of preparation.
Absolutely. And, of course, that goes to, you know, we talk about water. You know, it's interesting. Everyone always thought that water would be the biggest problem when it comes to, you know, the number of people on the planet.
Yeah,
the
maybe.
Water would disappear first. And now it almost seems it's possibly it would actually be, you know, grains and food and so forth. So,
well, it's one of those things that will go hand in hand to some degree. Mm-hmm. All right, it won't be necessarily one or the other. It'll be when it gets down to where you can't get enough food, it'll also be a time where a lot of people won't be able to find enough water. Part of the reason you won't get the food is because there's not enough water to, you know, make arable certain parts of the land that are otherwise, you know, where you can't normally grow food. There's some places you can grow food if you could get water to it. But if you can't run out of that water, and there's some places where they do grow food in places where you can't naturally find enough water. They do it by pumping the water out of the aquifer and irrigation. But you can see the future of irrigation if you take a flight on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Drive, you know, fly across from the East Coast to the West Coast, and you will see areas in the Southwest where you'll see a pattern of circles that are just white. Why? Because they have the circle, might be a couple hundred yards in diameter, 200 yards, I don't know, 100 yards, 200 yards in diameter. The circle is where the irrigation equipment used to rotate around. They used to grow crops there. But by pumping the water out of the ground, it's not like rainwater. Rainwater comes out of the sky without any minerals in it, at least normally. You bring the water up out of the ground, out of the aquifers, it's carrying minerals that are dissolved. They're in solution in the water. And when you keep using that to water the land up on top, the salts that are in the groundwater, when the groundwater evaporates out of the soil, they leave the salt in the soil. It makes the soil infertile. You can't grow crops there after a while. You can only do irrigation for so long with groundwater, with water that you pumped up out of the ground before you render the surface no longer it's no longer agriculturally productive. We're out of time for today. We'll be back mañana. Melody and I will return. In the meantime, I hope you all have a good day, good afternoon. May the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.